20. Parry crossed the open ground from the lander and waited politely for Bella to let him inside. In the hard suit, it would have been impossible for her to tell whether it was Parry or Svetlana waiting in her airlock, but when the inner door opened, he saw no surprise on her face. "Sit down," she said, taking the helmet from his hand and racking it. "I know you were hoping to speak to Svetlana."
"Hoping, not expecting. There's a world of difference."
She had brewed him tea from her rations. He sipped at it from a vat-forged china cup with a hinged lid, designed to keep the tea from wandering. Wang had printed it with the willow pattern, drawn from memory, but with great accuracy and delicacy of line. The tea was weak, the color of muddy rainwater, just the way he liked it. He wondered if Bella had remembered that from his last visit. "You're looking well," he ventured.
"For a 68-year-old woman, you mean?"
"Not every compliment has to be swatted down." He peered at her over the rim of his cup. "Not that Sveta's any better at accepting them."
"Would it have killed her to come in person?"
Perhaps she caught his glance towards the window. Svetlana had forbidden him to mention that she was a bored crusader. "It's not been easy for her lately," he said, "since Bob Anglis died, since the Iron Sky went up, since this. How much did you hear about what happened to Craig?"
"Enough."
"She blames herself for ever letting him inside that thing.
Did she point a gun at his head and frog march him to the door?"
"Of course not."
"Then she doesn't need to feel like a martyr."
Bella shrugged. "Unless she gets a kick out of it." "Craig died badly. We were listening in. We heard everything."
"I heard he saw mountains."
Parry nodded, amazed at how much information had seeped out to Bella. "He says he saw the Spikens. Axford isn't so sure. He thinks it was just Craig's neurochemistry shutting down."
"I'm sure he saw something."
"This is going to sound harsh," Parry said, "but in a way I'm glad it happened to Craig. We'd already lost him once. Losing him again, it's bad, but it's bound to hurt less than losing someone else."
"That does sound harsh,"
Bella said. She poured herself a little more tea, using a strainer improvised from a soot dust filter. Under Janus gravity, the liquid did not so much flow as meander into the cup.
"But I know what you mean."
"Will you tell me about Jim Chisholm?"
"I said I'd speak to Svetlana."
"I've done all I can. She's still not ready to deal with you." Bella raised an eyebrow speculatively.
"Why is that, do you think?
Could it possibly be that she doesn't want to acknowledge my existence? Because that would force her to confront what a mistake it was putting me here in the first place."
"You'd have made no material difference, Bella. We'd still have been on this ride, unable to get off."
"I heard about the trouble with the symbolists. I'd have handled them better."
"Easy to say from here."
"Easy for you to dismiss. But I'd have had my ways. Svetlana's mistake was treating the symbolists as an aberration, something that could be diagnosed and cured like a pathology. I'd have accepted their inevitability and made them work for me."
"More tea?"
"No, thanks." She tried to keep them from the moor because it offended her puritanical sensibilities to think that a bunch of cultists might actually be capable of running something. So she antagonized and marginalized them, sent spies and agitators in to try to break them up, which, of course, only made things worse.
"Whereas you would have..."
Her eyes widened. "I'd have embraced them, encouraged them. Zealots are exactly the sort of people you want running delicate machinery. The clockwork mechanism would have been in safe hands forevermore."
"It wouldn't have worked."
"Svetlana's methods were hardly a raging success, Parry." Bella sniffed. "Still, if she won't talk to me, no sense arguing with a sulking child, is there?"
"Then you'll talk to me?" Parry asked.
"If that's what it takes. The difference is I care about Crabtree, not my pride." Parry leaned forward and softened his voice, trying to connect with the woman under whom he had once served.
"Then tell me what this is all about. Tell me what Jim Chisholm has to do with what just happened to Craig Schroep."
"Everything," Bella said. She put down her teacup and studied Parry with an intensity he found disquieting, as if his very soul were being scrutinized for flaws. "It's about what Jim said to you, isn't it? The day you came back to Crabtree to visit him."
"Of course."
"But that was, what, 9 or 10 years ago, easily. Jim knew nothing about the Spikens."
but he knew we'd meet them one day, and that when we did it might be... Bella paused and hunted for the right word. Difficult. But his knowing that, it doesn't help us. I think it does, Bella said. You see, the thing is... This is difficult as well. I only have one thing still of value to me, Parry. She looked down at age-spotted fingers laced in indecision. It was a gift from Jim. He could have told you, could have told Svieta or Ryan or anyone else, but he didn't. He told me, because it was the only way he could give me something useful. And I've kept his secret all these years, knowing it might one day help us, knowing it might one day help me. But at the same time hoping, praying, that the time would never come when I needed to reveal it. She looked into his eyes with a sudden fierce gaze. But now, I think that time has come. Tell me, Parry whispered. I'd always hoped that I might use this to bargain with you. That's why I wanted to talk to Svieta. I'll relay any requests to her. I'm not asking for the world. Just let me come back to Crabtree. Allow me to play some kind of role in our affairs. Pass me my helmet, Parry said. Bella obliged. He locked the helmet back into place and returned to the airlock. With the door closed behind him and the helmet tightly sealed, he was sure Bella would not be able to hear him talking to Svetlana on the Crusader. Well? She asked. Bella's ready to talk. Jim told her something that might help us. She'll reveal it if we make concessions. I'm not negotiating. Get it out of her. Svieta? We're halfway through screwing up the most historic event in human history, Parry. I am not in the mood to bargain. Tell her that if she doesn't talk, we'll start taking stuff away. She'll clam up. You know Bella. There was a resentful silence at the other end of the line. Svetlana must have known he was right. The two women were too alike in temperament. What's she asking for? Svetlana asked after a few moments. A return to Crabtree. No fucking way. Listen to me, Parry said. Give her one of the outlying domes. It doesn't have to be in the Hab. She'll still be a prisoner. Again there was silence. It stretched for 20 or 30 seconds while Parry imagined Svetlana's anguished thought processes. Just Crabtree, she said. No other requests? She'd like to play more of a role in Crabtree affairs. No. Parry thought of Bella waiting on the other side of the lock, wondering what was going on. There's a way, he said. We already have a private channel for anonymous policy suggestions. She sounded surprised. Do we? Yes, just because you never look at it. But you do. I skim the suggestions now and then. Sometimes there's good stuff in them. When there is, I occasionally let it influence my thinking. Bella's locked out of that channel now, but it wouldn't cost us much to let her have her say. Anonymously, of course. She'd just be one voice amongst many. Does this run on Shipnet? It used to. Lately we've had to go back to paper notes dropped into sealed boxes, but it still works. I know her handwriting. It doesn't matter. You never read the damn things anyway. I don't know her handwriting, so what difference will it make? All right, Svetlana said with a world-weary sigh. Offer her this much. An outlying dome at Crabtree, surface access via airlock only. No one visits her without a suit, and she doesn't get one. I'll see if that flies. And the other thing? She can use the suggestion box. She'll be allowed a limited ration of paper. I don't want her flooding the fucking thing. Generosity's a lovely thing. He opened the inner door of the airlock and returned inside, unlatching his helmet at the same time. Bella shot him a knowing look. I can tell that went smoothly. Parry sat down opposite her. You've got your deal. You'll be moved to Crabtree, into one of the perimeter domes. No tunnel access, no suit. Continue, Bella said, giving nothing away. You get to submit policy suggestions through an anonymous channel. I'll read and screen them, not Svieta. Anything I think has wheels, she gets to hear. None of us will ever know who originated the suggestion. Very democratic of you. You'll be part of Crabtree life again. You can build on that. Perhaps, she said doubtfully. Everything that you've just offered me. I can trust you to deliver, can't I? Of course, Parry said. It's always been good to be able to talk to you, Bella said. It was a relief knowing not everyone hated me. There was always Axford. But you had every reason to turn against me. You didn't. I've appreciated that more than you'll ever know. You've always had my respect. Nothing's ever changed that. Then perhaps we had better talk about Jim Chisholm. Svetlana watched Parry cross the ground to Star Crusader, observed by another figure looking out of the dome. Parry passed out of view into the lander's airlock, and for a moment Svetlana felt as if Bella was looking at her, and she looking at Bella, even though they were too far away to see each other's eyes. Somehow that didn't matter, though. The human mind was so attuned to the importance of gaze that it could just tell. There was a moment of electric connection, like an emotional short circuit, before Svetlana flinched and looked away. Parry cycled through the airlock. She met him on the other side and helped him out of the suit, fingers urgent against the catches. Her fingertips felt raw, the nails chewed to the quick. Did she bite? She bit. Took some persuading, but she went for it in the end. I don't think she was all that excited about being transferred to another isolated dome. Being able to post suggestions, though, that mattered a lot to her. Whatever she needed to hear, Svetlana said. It wasn't about what she needed to hear, Parry replied. It was about what we were comfortable offering. Parry followed her into the lander's passenger lounge, with its scuffed decor and worn seats. Svetlana called Denise and told her they could return to Underhole. When Crusader was aloft, she said, Now tell me what this is all about. Parry took off his red cap and rubbed a hand through his graying hair. It's about what Jim told her in Crabtree, about his plans for what would happen when they came. They, she echoed flatly. The aliens he always guessed we'd meet. He figured that when we got to Spica, something like this was bound to happen. He knew he'd be dead by then, too. Parry paused, making sure he had her attention. Of course he did. Dead, but frozen. One of Ryan's frost angels. He nodded solemnly. Jim knew he was going to die, and he didn't think we had much hope of ever making it back to Earth. But aliens? He thought we had every chance of meeting them. After all, Janus was taking us somewhere. Pretty good bet there would be aliens at the end of the line. He was right, Svetlana said, thinking back to Shrope's cryptic final words in the alien ship. What does that have to do with our current predicament? Jim reckoned aliens would have a better chance of bringing him back than people ever did. He told Bella that when they came, if things didn't work out so well at first, we should send him to them. Send a dead man, she said. Dead men don't have a lot to lose. That's insane. Maybe, but is it any more insane than sending someone else inside that thing and waiting for them to die the same way Craig did? You don't send a dead man in as your negotiator, Svetlana said. Maybe I missed something, but I don't remember ever being shown the rule book for this situation. We've given them one corpse already. No, Parry said firmly. He was doing that maddening thing of staying calm, rationally arguing his case, never raising his voice or showing the least sign of irritation when she did not immediately see his position. We gave them a living man and they killed him. Probably not intentionally, but it still happened. But they didn't get a clean corpse at the end of it. They got a man who'd been crushed alive by gravity and pressure, a man who died in his spacesuit. He was still warm after his heart stopped, after the blood stopped flowing, but by the time they got to him, his brain must have looked like the Antarctic shelf. The damage was already done. Jim's just as dead. Jim's a frost angel. That makes all the difference. He's been frozen solid by a controlled medical process. He was euthanized before the cancer took away too much of his brain. There's still material there for them to work with. She emitted a small, humorless laugh. You're saying they might be able to bring him back? To them, he's like a broken clock. If we take him in like that, how can they not see that we want him mended? Ash Murray was there to meet them when Crusader docked at Underhole. Parry, Svieta, there's something you really need to see. They followed him back into the conference area. The dinners had been cleared away and the table laid with a loose mosaic of semi-functioning flexies. Everyone was looking expectantly at Svetlana, as if she was the long-awaited guest of honor finally showing up at a party. She swallowed to clear a mouth suddenly flooded with saliva. What? We got more than we thought, Murray said, picking at the corner of one eye with a finger. Near the end, when Craig was in the airlock chamber, or whatever we're calling it, we got a momentary improvement in signal throughput. She stood by the table, looking down at the ragged mosaic with its mismatched colour boundaries. I don't get it. What are you saying? Craig came through. He got us the imagery. He pointed the cam and we got a frame. It came through in low-end bits, riding the audio. That's an emergency protocol that kicks in automatically when the system decides that audio needs priority. It's why we missed it initially. A single frame. It's way better than no frame. She looked at the distorted composite image created by the flexies, but at first she could make no sense of it. It was blurred like a picture taken out of the window of a speeding car. Vague shapes, streaked hyphens of bleeding colour. Under the force of all that gravity, his breathing impaired by the rising pressure, it must have taken superhuman effort for Shrope to point the cam in even roughly the right direction, let alone hold it steady. But he had done his best, and he had got them something. "I take back what I said about hallucinations," Axford said quietly. Parry pointed at one of the blurred forms. "There's definitely something here." He moved his finger. "And here. And maybe here as well." "Spikens?" Svetlana said. Craig said there were several of them. He said they were big. He said they looked like mountains, Nadis said. "Except they don't." Svetlana narrowed her eyes, trying to mentally unscramble the effects of cam blur and the distortion due to the intervening glass. The aliens were large, upright forms of marine colour, blue, green, and turquoise. They looked like barnacles rising from a flared circular base, but that basic tapering shape was all they had in common with mountains. Their sides curved over to form a flattened top surface, not a peak. They had no obvious front or back, no recognizable limbs or sensory apparatus, no clear means of locomotion. They looked as if they had been baked in a cake mold. "But he saw them," Parry said. "He got the cam onto them. He said they were moving, coming closer." "If the optical properties of the glass changed, he might have mistaken that for motion," Axford said. "What we're seeing here might not be living. We might just be looking at mechanical structures." "No," Svetlana said firmly. "Craig knew what he was looking at. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt, shall we?" "They're not what I was expecting," Parry said. "I'm not exactly sure what any of us were expecting," Svetlana said, smiling at Parry. "If these are the Spikens," Nadis said, "do we keep on calling them that, or should we stick with the name Craig gave them?" "Craig got us this picture," Parry said. "That's enough to remember him by." "I'm wondering," Svetlana said slowly, tilting her head, "whether he might not have said mountains after all." Axford left for Crabtree on Crusader. When he returned 4 hours later, he had one of the Frost Angels with him. The body was in a grey metal medical cabinet, still in a state of cryogenic suspension. Svetlana had confirmation by then that Bella had told the truth about Jim Chisholm's wishes. Bella had given Parry a code phrase, "Multitudinous Seas Incarnadine," that unlocked a private partition in Jim Chisholm's old data partition. His flexi had died years ago, but the entries he'd made on it had been distributed throughout the surviving network, and they remained intact. The code word conjured up a short video clip Chisholm had made from his deathbed, holding the cam in one hand while he spoke. Svetlana shivered to hear him speak again.
"If you're hearing this," he said, "then you either talked to Bella or you got damned good at decryption. Don't take this the wrong way, but I'm guessing the former."
A ghost of a smile touched his wasted features.
"I hope things are okay for you all. If it's come to this, then at least some of you made it all the way to Spica, and there is someone or something waiting for you now you're there. If Bella has relayed my wishes, please be assured that she's told you the truth. As difficult as it may be for you to grasp, this is what I want you to do. We all remember those discussions about the theoretical nature of alien intelligence. I reviewed the summaries, even though I couldn't sit in on them in person. The long conversations about how, if we ever do meet anyone, they'll most likely be tens of millions of years ahead of us in every respect. Makes sense to me. If there's anything we've learned from our own history, it's that intelligence is a precious thing, rare and vulnerable. If the Spikens are still out there, then they've probably been starfaring for an awfully long time. I'm sure putting Humpty Dumpty together again won't be too much of a stretch for them. So bring me to them, and see what they make of me. At the very least, they might learn something about us just by taking me apart and seeing what makes me tick. Maybe it won't work out, but if it doesn't, I'll have lost nothing. Jim Chisholm smiled a dead man's smile, and if I do come back, I'll do my best not to scare the living daylights out of you. Svetlana returned to the hole in the sky. She carried the Frost Angel with her on an improvised sled, dragged it all the way to the Spiken ship, which was still running its cymbal dance. But when she neared the ramp, the flicker of cymbal slowed and stilled, as if the ship recognized her presence and wished to show it. Its watchful attention lifted the hairs on the back of her neck. She walked up the ramp and followed Shrope's trail into the glass interior. She found the spherical chamber where he had come to grief. She pushed the sled over the lip and watched it slide all the way down until it skidded to rest, the frozen body lashed to it like an offering. The glass airlock sphincted shut between her and the chamber. Nothing happened to the space where she stood. She could still see the sled and its cargo through the glass. Presently, they came. At first they were vague shapes approaching from beyond the far wall of the chamber. They were huge, just as Craig Shrope had said, 3 meters tall and at least as wide across at the base. They moved in an odd way, unlike any form of animal locomotion she had ever witnessed. They were blue, mainly, a pure chromatic blue shot through with twinkling filaments of green and turquoise, and sometimes a flash of bright ruby. They crowded the glass to see what she had brought them, flattening themselves against the surface like children pressing their faces against a window. Slowly, so as not to alarm them, she unclipped her cam and shot some footage. If the aliens were aware of her, they gave no sign. She could see them better now. Cylindrical in horizontal cross-section, they had no obvious front or back. What had looked like a solid form in the single-frame Shrope had sent them was revealed to be a curtain of very fine fronds, erupting from a central point and spraying down in all directions to brush against the floor. Not like mountains at all, but fountains. That was what Craig Shrope had said. His description captured their essence in a single word. They looked like ornamental fountains spraying colored water. They were constantly moving, even when they stood still, the fronds rippling, flexing, and interlacing like a nest of glittering snakes. They moved by flicking the fronds against the floor in a propulsive wave. Whenever a curtain of fronds parted, all she saw within were further layers of frond-like structure. These, then, were the aliens. They were clearly not part of the ship. They were definitely not robots, not even alien robots. Something about the way they moved, the way they squeezed against the glass, suggested living individuals rather than directed units. A door opened in the chamber's far side, and one of the blue things oozed through the gap. The door looked far too narrow at first, but Svetlana had seen octopuses pull off similar tricks and flowed down to the sled. Another alien followed it. She kept the cam trained on the pair as they flowed around the sled and then engulfed it completely. For a moment the two shapes were as one, as if conferring over the prize. Then one of them disengaged, flowed back to the door and squeezed through. After some hesitation, the other followed it. The sled and the Frost Angel had vanished.
"Take good care of him," Svetlana whispered.
She turned around and began to make her way back to Underhole.